Here.
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Nathan Hayes.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero. Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers.
Here.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz. Board Chair Wheeler Coleman.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Brady, would you please confirm that appropriate notice of this meeting has been provided and that we have a quorum present?
Mr. Vice Chair, we have reached quorum and appropriate notices have been provided by the university.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to agenda item number 3. We need to approve the agenda for today, so may I have a motion to approve the agenda for today as proposed?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is approved. Agenda item 4, review and approval of minutes from the meeting of November 15th, 2018. May I have a motion to approve the minutes from November 15th, 2018?
So moved.
Is there a second? Okay, is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed? The motion is approved. Agenda item number 5, chair's comments. So I want to welcome all of the members from the University Advisory Committee, of which I see a number of them there today. Therese, Kathy, Holly, I think I saw Kendall as well. So at this point in time, I would open it up to you for any comment that you might have.
I have nothing. Just a very brief remark, Kathy Doderline, SPS, Council President. Just wanted to note, in terms of the marketing and support services item, just want to encourage, and I know this is already top of mind for the administration, but as we're working with outside entities for different things, making sure that things that we obviously have the resources and skills for here, as well as the people for here, that we're not displacing any existing, you know, staff to bring in that outside support. And that doesn't seem to be the case here, but it's just something that when that type of thing comes up, I can't hurt to chime in with that yet again.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being here. So for Chair's comments, on behalf of Chair Coleman, who sends his regrets for not being here today, and the NIU Board of Trustees, I just want to wish everybody a Happy New Year. And we look forward to a great, productive year and working together for the common good of NIU, for our students, our faculty, and staff, and the administration. You know, we have a great university, and I, for one, couldn't be more proud to be a part of this community, to be a part of the Board of Trustees, and I'm looking forward to a great 2019. I am still the vice chair for this meeting. I will assume the chair's role, current course and speed, come our next meeting. So at that point in time, I'll have further comments from my chair seat at that time. But so at this point in time, we will move to agenda item number 6, public comments. So we recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and the Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board. With Mr. Brady. Mr. Brady, have you received any timely requests to address this meeting?
Mr. Vice Chair, I have received no timely requests.
Okay, great. We will move to agenda item number 7, the President's Report, number 130. At this time, I will ask President Lisa Freeman to present agenda items 7A through 7C.
Thank you, Trustee Barsima. And before I present the agenda items, I just would like to say Happy New Year and welcome to 2019 to everybody who's here with us today. I also look forward to a wonderful spring and a wonderful year. So. Agenda item 7A is our constituent relationship management system replacement. And I will use the acronym CRM for the rest of my discussion of this item. Our Division of Enrollment Management, Marketing, and Communication is essentially requesting approval to replace our current CRM, which has become, over time, outdated technology, with an up-to-date CRM that helps us do in the fashion that is expected in 2019 what's needed to track prospective student contacts, manage events, send email communications, run campaigns, manage student data, and we are looking for 2019 functionality in a new system to achieve the goals of data management, campaign and communication management, recruitment activity, event management, and admissions and application decision processing and communications. The funding that's being requested is appropriated and income funds not to exceed $2.5 million throughout the term of the contract, including the initial 2.5-year term plus 7 1-year renewal terms. The request is for the Board of Trustees' approval of the CRM system replacement and authorization for the expenditure of funds not to exceed $2.5 million through the term of the final agreement with the selected CRM vendor. There's a lot of information in the item, but we also have with us in the audience both Vice President Sarah McGill, who can speak to some of the financial dimensions of the request, and Vice President Saul Jensen, who can talk to the criticality of the CRM to our enrollment management operation.
Great, thank you, Dr. Freeman. So may I have a motion to approve agenda item 7A? Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
For clarity's sake, who is going to be the lead from the university in this contractual arrangement?
Vice President Jensen.
So, Trustee Pritchard, just to understand the question, did you ask who's going to be the lead?
From the day-to-day operations.
Yeah, so that would fall underneath our office. So we actually have a CRM office under our university marketing wing, and really ties in closely with both admissions and ties in closely with our marketing communications.
I just think it's important that we have someone that's monitoring this and making sure the arrangement works well.
We're in there every single day.
Yes.
Just a comment or a question on the format of the item. And I think we've seen this before, where we'll have a $2.5 million kind of cap expenditure, and then a little bit of vagueness with respect to the time, 2.5 years plus 7 1-year renewals. So we kind of put a capstone at $2.5 million. The reality of it would be is if we spent, you know, being exaggerating to make a point, $2.5 million in or $2.4 million in 2 years. We'd be good, right? And we'd come back and request more. So it just seems like the expectation here is roughly $250,000 a year. I would just feel better kind of just flushing that out, right? And kind of getting that out on the table and saying, this is what we expect. If we spend $260,000, that's okay. But if we spend $700,000, we wouldn't know about that for 3 or 4 years kind of thing, that we're way off. So just, I don't know that I need anything for that. I just feel better talking about it and sort of getting it out there. But your expectations are $250,000 a year kind of thing, right?
Yes, that'd be the expectation on average. The one piece that we're not clear on yet is that there could be, during the first year, there could be a little bit more for mm-hmm. implementation costs. So we wanted to build some of that in to that initial 2.5. But on average, we would expect it to be approximately about that. We've looked at benchmarks of some of our other institutions across Illinois who have gone with new CRMs over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's right in line. And in fact, I think, again, we're trying to be safe here mm-hmm. on the higher end. I don't think we're going to probably get to that point.
We've had a few of these items over the past year or two where we'll make an investment on this, expecting certain revenues to come back and, in a sense, cover the cost. I'm not sure if there's a direct piece here, but it does seem
appropriate that there would be some sort of an annual check-in, you know, just to cite, here was the expectation and here's how we're doing. And I don't know if you would have benchmarks so much with this, maybe. Surely in the next items, I think there will be. And so I'm talking again more general in terms of the structure of these sort of things and then how they come back. I mean, 10 years, theoretically, we may not see this for nine more years kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the idea of just sort of, we made this motion, we made this investment, and a simple check-in in the course of a year sort of thing, I think would be valuable for the board and administration.
So I guess for this item, I think the check-in should be not just focused on a net revenue benchmark, which might actually be hard to tease out.
Yeah.
But I think we also have to think about the fact that our entire enrollment management operation depends on this.
Yeah.
And although we don't know the cost of not doing this, that is also severe.
Right.
As we have a 10-year-old CRM with very basic functionality, and our competitors
yeah.
have capable
yeah.
and functional CRMs, but certainly updating the board on what was invested, the functionality that was achieved, seems very appropriate.
Yeah, I'm following you 100%. And I think, you know, the other extreme would be is that it gets put on a shelf 2 years from now, and we wouldn't know about that either. So some sort of check-in on a broader topic, I think, would be healthy.
Of course.
Yep.
Great. I agree.
So, Lisa, I'll let you determine who to answer this, if not yourself. So we're in the process of, we've led an RFP, or we're engaged in a formal RFP. Is the current vendor Hobson, are they still in this business, and are they one of them? And where are we at in the RFP process? Have we collected responses back? And are we going to make a decision here in the next 30, or do we anticipate a decision in the next 30 days, or have we not even received responses back?
I'm going to let Vice President Jensen talk about the selection process and where we are in that process, but I'm going to suggest that because we're not through the process, that the vendor names not be part of
fine.
The public record.
I kind of realized that once I said it, so yeah.
Yeah, and we are literally immediately in the process right now. So the RFP went out a couple of months ago. We're currently at the stage where we're reviewing all of the submissions.
Okay.
We are expecting to have that review completed by next Friday. And the next step would be then to bring the top three scoring vendors to campus or to do some sort of a demonstration for our team.
Okay.
Following that, we'll tally up the final scores, make sure procurement and legal counsel works with the contract. Our hope is within the next couple of months that we'll have a vendor on board and we can start the process of migrating information implementation, which that total process we expect would take about a year,
right?
Which is why we're trying to get this. It's so timely right now.
Okay, so that's great. So that's a good lead into my follow-on question to kind of follow on to Trustee Pritchard and the question that he asked about the migration. Having been through a CRM migration myself, I know that there's expenses up front that we're going to incur just for the migration, regardless of what vendor we go with. Is there any anticipation that this will have a negative impact on 2019 financials?
Your question, there will be increased costs, but it won't be a negative action. We have been in close coordination throughout this process, knowing that this was an investment that we needed to make. So that has all been planned and included as we look forward to future years.
Okay, great. Thank you. Other questions?
Can I just add one comment? Vice President McGill just talked about the close coordination between her division and enrollment management, marketing, and communications. And I want to commend all the members of those divisions. And I want to give a particular shout out to Antoinette Bridges, our Director of Procurement Services, for recognizing how important enrollment management is to the function of this university over the short and long term, and for being an excellent partner and steward on this item and the next item, working very closely with those involved to make this move as smoothly as possible.
And I would echo that. I'm super excited that we're doing this. This is a huge need that we have. And this will be a huge help to the enrollment management track that we're on. So thank you for getting this to this stage and across the finish line eventually. Other questions? Yeah. Okay. We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is approved. Section 7B.
Agenda item 7B is marketing and support services for online education programs. NIU support for online and off-campus students and programs was identified through our program prioritization process as in need of transformation, particularly the need to look at seeking a partner specifically to provide market demand analysis, recruitment lead generation, and concierge services for online student support to grow enrollment. These are services, as Kathy Doderling quite correctly noted during her comments, we are not currently positioned to provide at the level that a partner could provide for the essential enrollment growth in online education programs. And if you look at the board item, we actually have a table that shows NIU and our excellent faculty and staff remain responsible for academic and administrative leadership, admissions decisions, collateral approval, advising, course development, instructional design, and the aspects of curriculum and delivery that are core to our mission as a university. The university is requesting approval to enter into an agreement with Wiley Education Services with an initial term starting February 1st, 2019 and ending December 31st, 2021. We are asking to initiate up to 2 one-year renewals. You'll note here the vendor is named in the item because we are further along in the RFP and selection process that was described under the previous item. So the request from the university is for the Board of Trustees to authorize us to enter into the proposed agreement with Wiley Educational Services, consistent with the program goals outlined in the item once final details and terms are negotiated. The authorization shall be delegated to the president or designee for final signature on agreement, with the understanding that the president shall report to the board when the final agreement is executed, as well as the principal terms and conditions of the agreement. If terms and conditions of the proposed arrangement deviate substantially from the program goals and framework outlined in this item, the president will return the matter to the board for consideration of substantial modifications to the proposal.
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? John?
This would be an item that I would want to learn more about over the term of the contract. And I think here, as I would like to learn more about it in relation to financial aspects of it, of course, the return on investment when that begins to show itself, as well as the technical aspects of it to the extent that it's not proprietary and overly competitive, because I think this is really such a critical piece. I know that we've talked about over several years different approaches to reaching the marketplace for online learning. And if I understand correctly, this is going to begin with existing complete programs, programs that are completely online, and it won't necessarily require as much money annually as is listed here until we have the number of programs necessary to reach that level of expenditure. Am I correct about that?
We are starting with 6 existing programs: the Masters of Science in Data Analytics, the Master of Science in Digital Marketing, the Master of Science in Nursing, the Master of Public Health, the Bachelor of Science in Nursing for RN, so that's our RN to BSN degree completion program, and the Doctor of Nursing Practitioners. These were identified as the best places to start based on market demand, and as you noted, the current state of those programs. We anticipate in fiscal year 20, which will be year one of the agreement, that after expenses, we will have $2.1 million in revenue, which will be a $1.2 million revenue increase, basically a doubling of our revenue from the current programs. Net revenue for these programs is anticipated to increase to $7.1 million in year two and $11.4 million in year three.
Thank you.
Tim?
I'm just thinking of the revenue side of this, and when we had the chance to get a debriefing on the item, we focused really on the cost and the fact that there would be some revenue discussion at the meeting. Clearly, that's a key component of the action. So I'm hearing this for the first time. So $11.4 million projected in year three. How many would that be, assuming that there's an expansion of the number of programs beyond?
No, those numbers are for the phase one programs, these 6 programs that I just outlined, that I just recited.
So simple math of $1.9 million per program, and just grab a number of $15,000 or something. I'm just trying to see the number of kids, number of students, I should say kids, number of students. 125 kind of ballpark.
So if you compare where we are now as baseline in terms of FTE enrollment, across the programs we are at 235 students, but at the end of year one, we would go to 332 students. There are separate numbers for student credit hours. If you want those projections beyond year 19 to 20, I may ask Jason Rohde to take the microphone, but I think basically we're agreement on
the
growth.
Yeah, okay, I'm all right. And we're confident, obviously, in those assumptions, and there's probably a most likely scenario, best case, worst case kind of thing, and confident in a break-even number that we can cover the cost.
A lot of effort has gone into these projections, and I think we have as much confidence as you could possibly have.
Okay.
Is there a percentage on the ROI? I know we gave a lot of numbers there, but is there an ROI percentage here on the business case that we know? I don't have a calculator.
So let me give you an example. Between year one and year two, our costs go from $640,000 to $2.5 million, but our return on investment goes from $1.2 million to $7.1 million. So obviously the return is exceeding the increased cost, which is what you would hope would happen for doing this.
And getting back to the comment that was made on agenda item A, this is one that we would want to track and make sure that we're meeting our benchmarks in what we expect.
Absolutely. Provost McCord caught my eye. I think he might want to add something to the discussion. I'd like to give him that opportunity since he's been very engaged with this initiative.
So the forecast we're looking at, as indicated, basically we have a $2 return for every dollar invested with Wiley in year one. By year three, that grows to $5 in return for every dollar invested with Wiley.
So can we invest more money with Wiley? Because if I can get a fiber...
The answer is yes. And we are... that is for the six programs in phase one. They have indicated to us that launching six programs in year one is an ambitious goal. We're well on track for that goal, but they discouraged us from being more ambitious than that in year one. Once those programs are successfully launched in year one, we will look phase two at adding more programs to the stable, absolutely, including the opportunity of new programs that we will bring to you for approval, and we will launch immediately into an online environment. So yes, we are, and so the board item is actually constructed to give us not just capacity to launch phase one, but to grow into more ambitious undertakings. We've done careful analysis to make sure we are leading with programs that have a high ROI. We will look carefully as we bring other programs online to make sure that they have likewise a solid ROI, okay, before we advance them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob.
Could you give us a little more background as to who Wiley is, some of the clients they may have, and their track record for producing the kind of results that you've indicated?
So Wiley doesn't share a complete list of their clients with us, but they have shared, and we are aware of a few of the more than 35 universities that they currently support. Those include Purdue, Indiana University, Seton Hall University, Benedictine University, the State University of New York, the Open SUNY Initiative, St. Mary's University of Minnesota, the University of Delaware, the University of Scranton, and Utica College. And was there another part to your question? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
So their track record with these other universities indicates confidence in what they're suggesting for us?
Yes, certainly as part of the selection process, we ask those types of questions and look at that type of comparative data across the vendors who are being considered. And we felt that the flexible financial model, their collaborative approach, their time in the market and their history of success, as well as their Chicagoland location, were all things that gave us confidence in choosing Wiley as a partner. Of course, making that determination in the context of the state procurement process following all of the applicable laws and guidelines.
Thank you.
Other questions? John?
I think I'm correct that this engagement has an inbound marketing component as well. So what we're doing here is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm fairly sure that we're entering this digital space where people who may not even know who we are, but are looking for these types of programs, we will be able to capture them. We'll be able to find them as they're searching for us, where we otherwise would not have been able to do that. They would have had to have known about us or found us through some more general internet search. But in this case, it's a much more sophisticated background mechanism by which we become a kind of preferred, potentially more enhanced link that is established between them and their search and us. Am I right about that?
Yes, through the wonders of the internet and the associated types of data analytics, our programs will be presented to students who are looking for programs of that type and have some likelihood of being interested in our programs. And as those prospects are identified, the follow-up will be quick and appropriately persistent to what the analytics indicate those leads would prefer. And that's just a capability that this university and others don't have, and that's what makes partnerships like this attractive. We talk about the flexible approach of this vendor being attractive. A decade ago, as these types of operations came to be, you really couldn't make a partnership without handing over the keys. And that's something that we and many other universities were not comfortable doing. at this point in time, what's been developed and the capabilities of doing just what you said, of identifying people who are looking for these types of programs and matching them to ours, that capability exists in these type of partners. They know how valuable it is. They're willing to offer it in an unbundled fashion, and we couldn't replicate it with all the resources that we're putting forward here.
But let me just, if I can just follow up. So there's got to be also sort of a background technical component to the uploading of the course content and the interactive capacity between the students and the faculty so that they can facilitate the curriculum. Is that part of this, or is that in-house?
We have maintained control over those aspects of curriculum and delivery and platform, and that's to make sure that the product that we deliver is consistent with what NIU believes is the appropriate student experience academically, not just in terms of content, but in terms of level of engagement, pacing, etc. But I'm going to ask if either the provost or Dr. Rohde want to add anything to what I said along those lines, because they're certainly more expert than I am.
Actually, at this point, I'll invite Dr. Rohde to make a comment, because he is not only our director of extended learning, but is also the director of the Faculty Development and Instructional Design Center, which is integral to the roles you've addressed.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the question. And to respond and maybe to give a little bit of context to, as President Freeman was saying, this unbundled nature of these services. So when we went out with the RFP, we basically gave a list of all of our online programs, and we asked the vendors to come back to us and talk to us and tell us what's the market demand for these existing programs that we have, as well as we identified in that RFP process the services that we have the capacity and expertise in that we did want to retain. So the table that you see with the NIU services, among those are our faculty development and instructional design services. We have staff who provide workshops and training. We have instructional designers who work with faculty to develop online courses and programs, and that's a capacity we've had for quite some time. And so, as President Freeman stated, what was really attractive to us was to be able to really leverage and maximize the expertise we have already without having to pursue and to develop, you know, additional areas where it's not our core competence and isn't something that's really core to the mission of what we do. And so really what Wiley has provided is really the menu of services and listing all of the programs. And for us to, as Provost McCord mentioned, being able to move quickly into pursuing the following phases. So as we think about year one, those initial programs, we selected the programs that we can begin marketing efforts now to impact fall of 19 enrollment. That's our immediate focus. Wiley typically recommends being in the market for 9 months leading up to the start of new programs. So even with a February 1st contract start date, we're pushing the envelope with that to affect fall. But that's really our initial focus. Beginning in March, most likely, we will begin discussions, follow-up discussions, to begin looking at what phase two looks like. And we may have additional programs potentially as soon as spring of 2020 to launch that would be part of that next phase. So as Provost McCord, I think, indicated, we're doing everything we can to move very quickly so that we can impact fall 19 enrollments.
Comment with respect, I suppose, the current and future accounting on this, as I think about, you know, we've talked for a long time about this as a key strategic focus going forward, and really encouraged that we're doing it, for one. Secondly, encouraged by the, you know, kind of lofty expectations. So my mind gets optimistic there and goes down the road a bit. And you think of the revenue and the expenses tied to this, and a really nice piece of adding incremental net revenue to the university for all kinds of good things we can do with that investment, right? So from an accounting perspective, it seems cost accounting, will we keep track of online this segment of our business, right, and understand that compared to the traditional pieces and so on? So, and I'm seeing Sarah nod her head yes, which is great. Usually we catch these things after the fact and we want to go back, and it's hard to recreate.
So we have a goal goals and objectives in goal strategies and very specific objectives in the strategic enrollment management plan that will be released next week related to online program growth. So we tend to track and be accountable on this for business intelligence regions, as you pointed out.
And that would roll all the way up to the actual financial statements that we would see.
We will be tracking those, and we are happy to share them.
Yeah.
Nathan? Okay. One last question, just kind of a follow-on to the previous agenda item. Who is responsible for this migration or installation? What person or department?
I believe when Dr. Rohde was at the mic, you were looking at the responsible party.
I assumed that, but I didn't want to jump to any quick assumption. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, we have a motion, we have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is approved. Agenda item 7C.
Agenda item 7C is a request for delegated authority regarding purchase of high performance computing. The Division of Research and Innovation Partnerships requests approval to replace the existing Center for Research Computing and Data computing facilities with a next-generation machine properly sized to meet the needs of the university faculty and scientists. The total costs for the new high-performance computing are anticipated to be in the range of $500,000 to $1 million, depending on the recommendations coming out of a task force that has been charged to make those recommendations regarding the purchase. The university requests Board of Trustees authorization to purchase a new high-performance computing facility after final details and costs are determined and negotiated. This kind of makes me a little bit sad because I was actually the vice president for research when the current facility was established. And in the what seems to me relatively short time I've been at the university, we've gone through an extra generation of obsolescence for our high performance computing. So I'm glad that at least I still seem to have some value, even though our computing is no longer meeting the needs and enabling the success of our researchers and scientists. So the recommendation is that the university request Board of Trustees authorization to purchase a new high-performance computing facility consistent with the details in the item once final details and costs are determined and negotiated. The authorization is requested to be delegated to the president for final approval of the contract, with the president reporting to the board upon execution of the contract. Again, if terms and conditions of the purchase deviate substantially from the framework outlined here, the president will return the matter to the board for consideration of substantial modifications to the proposal. And I'm going to tell you up front, Dennis, that I think Dr. Blasey is the best person to answer questions about this item. So.
Okay, great. May I have a motion to approve? A second?
Second.
Any discussion? And I'll start off by just asking, do we have the cost of high-performance computing 8 years ago when you brought it into the university versus today? I would imagine the cost was a bit different, being higher 8 years ago. So, John?
I've had some discussion with Dr. Blasey about this already, but I think it might be interesting to put on the record a little bit more of a description of what role this facility and these capabilities play in the research of our faculty and the programs that we're operating. So can you give us, even to the point of maybe an example, of who would use this type of equipment and why?
Sure, Trustee Butler. You have to excuse my voice. I'm still recovering from a recent cold. It's used in a broad set of disciplines, most frequently in the STEM fields. For instance, within physics, the facility is used to simulate the performance of accelerators, or the behavior of detectors in experiments. Over in engineering, it's used to make calculations about granular flow of sand or fluids through a system so we can understand the system, the systems better. Chemistry, it's, excuse me, in chemistry it's used to do molecular or atomic calculations to better understand the behavior of designed materials. One thing that's happening very recently is high-performance computing is finding applications outside of the STEM fields, and in particular used for textual analysis in the humanities, looking at repeated uses of phrases and vast samples of text to look at authorship or development of language. And also it's starting to be used in the arts to help with data interpretation. The fields of art have different ways of looking at data, and matching them up with computer science has proved to be very fruitful, and we have a nascent program in data visualization that started just last year in CVPA. And very recently, we've started discussing use of high-performance computing with an anthropologist that works at Argonne National Laboratory. And we hope to enter into a joint position with that individual. And I just point that out because one of the features of having high-performance computing is it makes you a better partner for the national labs. And so hopefully that gives you a sense of the breadth and the depth of the use of high-performance computing.
Did all that just come off the top of your head?
Sadly, that's true.
It's simply extraordinary.
Bob.
So, Dr. Blasey, please expound a little bit more on the notion that this is, I believe, a 60-node CPU-GPU hybrid cluster. Is that adequate for growth, if you will, in our research efforts?
So the current cluster, Gaia, is a 60-node CPU, okay, GPU cluster. And I would say that if it's adequate for our current uses, except that that system is starting to fail, and it's the nodes are can't be replaced at this point, and there is really no growth for expanded use. And I'm particularly concerned about what NICS will require, our new Center for Sustainability, and we are trying very hard to broaden those collaborations with the labs. So the hardware that exists, although obsolete in the sense that it's very outdated and there's much more superior machines available, it can still be used, but it will not promote the kind of growth that we want to see.
Okay. This isn't going to require any additional facilities, is it?
No. The current installation is housed over in Swen Parsons on this wing right over here. It has adequate rack space, cooling, HVAC, everything, and bandwidth, everything you need to install it. So I do not think, and maybe I'm looking at Matt for a little confirmation, I do not think that it would require any increase to the physical plant.
Very good. Thank you.
Tim?
A very elementary question. Is high-performance computing available in the cloud today, or will it be in the future?
Yes, it is, and in fact, the task force is looking at that as an option. So we may end up buying hardware, or we may end up buying time in the cloud, and they will come back to us with their recommendation. We're even considering a hybrid where you do have a minimally sized cluster, and if you find yourself having peak needs, you send some of that demand out to the cloud. I will say that other universities with much larger research programs have been looking into this and still are only using the cloud in very limited sense. But yes, we're looking at it as an option.
Okay. Thank you.
What's the timeline, Dr. Blasey, for this? Because clearly this is still a task force stage and there's a pretty wide cost range from $500,000 to $1 million. So can you give us a timeline of
So
what happens next?
Our original plan was to have this task force recommendation presented to an oversight group sometime in the spring. And I think we're still on schedule for that. Part of the reason to do this asked for this recommendation was to sort of take some pressure off of that timeline, because it, frankly, it decouples us from the board meeting a cycle. But sometime in the spring, the installation, they'll need, 3 months for an RFP, and the installation could probably start between summer and fall.
Okay.
So it sounds like this is a fiscal 20 sort
of
expense.
Yeah, it will be a fiscal 20. It'll be financed, so we will spread our costs over 3 years.
Okay. Other questions, Tim?
Yeah, the question, I guess, again, on the structure of the motion, and thinking when you said finance, probably at least if it's a hard asset, and obviously a contract if it's in the cloud. But the motion we have is for $500,000 to $1 million in total?
Correct. Correct, total.
Okay. So, and we're not citing in this case a term. I don't believe I saw that.
This is really an enabling board item.
Yeah.
So that the cycle of board meetings to authorize moving forward with this doesn't prevent us from starting the procurement and purchasing processes in this fiscal year.
Okay.
So it will probably be easy to report back with more detail once the recommendations come out. But we would be uncomfortable proceeding without this type of authorization to back up our actions, and the timelines and the synchrony with the board meetings, we just don't want to lose time for something that's essential.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that it's liberal enough, loose enough to allow you to get done what you need to.
It is.
Okay.
It is. I thought very hard about the range that we provided you. I didn't want to disincentivize the committee to do its work. I didn't want to over-incentivize them to buy too big of a machine, so I very carefully picked this to be sure they could do their job, but not to send what I would call false signals.
And I guess the fact that if a time range is not identified here, that's not constraining really at all to you. So I'm good as I think through that. Thanks.
That's correct.
Other questions? Okay. We have a motion to approve. We have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is approved.
And that concludes the president's report.
Thank you, Dr. Freeman. Agenda item 8. Are there other matters that require the attention of the committee or of the Board of Trustees today? Okay. Agenda item 9, the next meeting date. The next meeting of the full Board of Trustees will be March 7th at 9 a.m. Agenda item 10, may I have a motion to adjourn this meeting? Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is approved and the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you for your attendance.